Welcome to the Automators Podcast. I'm David Sparks. Rosemary can't be here this week. She's out sick, but that's okay, gang. I've got a friend with me. Welcome back to the show, Charlie Chapman.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a few years. I thought it was recent, and then I went and listened to it, and I was like, we were in the very middle of the, or at the beginning of the pandemic when we recorded last time.
Yeah, Charlie is the developer of the Dark Noise application, and I think you were our first developer interview on the show, or one of the first. Rosemary and I are both big fans of your app, Charlie, and it's just such a, it's a great app, but you're also just, every time I see you at WWC or we bump into each other, I just love your take on what's going on in the Apple ecosystem. You're a guy who's in the thick of it, not only developing your app, but also pursuing automation on behalf of yourself and your users. So it's always interesting to hear what you have going on. And I'll just do a pitch real quick for Dark Noise, because I think it's so awesome.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Dark Noise is it's a white, I call them white noise apps. I don't know if that's the word you're supposed to use. What do you use, Charlie? What do you call it?
Yeah, I usually say white noise first because that's what people know. Ambient noise, because it's not just white noise, but yeah.
It is the app that I think I run the most. I don't know if I have to dig up user statistics or anything, but I have tinnitus. Although people tell me I pronounce that wrong, Charlie. I'm not sure if that's right or not.
I've always said tinnitus. I have heard people say tinnitus or something, which
yeah.
For whatever reason, is not how I've said it, and it sounds weird to me, but I could be wrong.
Either way, I got the buzzing, man. I got the minor third between the left and the right ear. So when I'm not listening to music, I like to have some kind of noise to kind of blur that out. And the Dark Noise Thunderstorm track has probably been played like 10,000 hours in my house. So I don't know. It's my go-to app because it sounds good. But it's super automation friendly, so I can just trigger it like when I get into edit mode or whatever. You've done such a great job with the automation on it, and I just love that.
Well, thank you. That makes me feel very good to hear.
The funny we had you on the show before. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But just a real quick summary: you made the app just to test out making apps, right? I mean, this was not like you didn't expect this to become a livelihood, right?
No. It was very much I kind of finagled my way onto an iOS team at the company I was at. I'd done programming, but not like Apple development. And I went through, because I'm a dork, I have, of course, a list of app ideas if I ever, you know, took the time to learn how to make apps. So I went through my list. I found one that didn't need like a back end or anything. And it was this white noise generator, because my wife uses one every night. And when we had switched from Android to iOS a few years before that, we couldn't find one that we really liked. We had one on Android that we liked fine, but we just never could find one. And so I was like, oh, that'll be the perfect sort of test bed. And then it kind of took off in a way that I definitely did not expect.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were terrible before you showed up, I will tell you, because I am a connoisseur of white noise apps because of the tinnitus. And the there were some, I remember there was one that had like little dangly things that would swing when you, it was just nuts.
To their credit, I'll say, I think there's two categories of other white noise apps out there. There's the ones that like got in the store right away and they have really good, you know, search optimization. And so they've kind of sat, and those are the ones that kind of look really old.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them that are really cool sort of experience apps, like for meditation or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was trying to thread this needle of like, I want something that you never have to even open, because that's not the point. The point is you like, you play it and you get out, you go to sleep or you focus on work or whatever. And so I think I'm targeting something a little different than what everybody else is doing.
Yeah. Well, and I'm in your target audience, because I don't need an animation of me walking through the forest. I just need the thunderstorm noise so I can get my work done. So I guess that's why you and I are such a good match, because your app is perfect. So how's it going though? So we had you on before, like I said, but it's been many years, and Dark Noise is still a great app doing really well, but you have continued to evolve automation on Dark Noise. What are you doing and how's it going?
So in the like pure automation front, probably the biggest thing is Apple's improved our shortcuts integration since then. So, you know, you can run it in the background. I think I even complained about the lack of parameterized shortcuts in our last episode, and now that's there. So I can have just like, there's like two main shortcuts, which is find a noise if you wanted to like search by string or something like that, yeah. And then play a noise. And then everything works on parameters from that, whether you want it to play with a timer, whether you want it to like fade out a long time so that it doesn't wake you up in the middle of the night by suddenly shutting off, all that kind of stuff are just parameters in the shortcuts. So shortcuts, I feel like, are pretty well full-featured. But really, there hasn't been a whole lot in that space in the last few years. The really big thing to me, which goes with my whole ethos for Dark Noise, is the widgets, like the initial home screen widgets, and then the sort of spread across the whole platform of sticking widgets everywhere you can possibly imagine. And that has been the exciting thing every year for me, is finding new places where I can stick a button with all the configuration that App Intents gives you, which I get kind of for free because of my shortcut support. And then you can hit that button in your lock screen, on your home screen. And then this year, actually today, as we're recording, today now you can do in the control center or on your lock screen in those bottom two buttons. You can play a sound from there with the new control center widgets.
Yeah, I want to back up just a little bit for the listeners, because it seems like for automation, App Intents have become like the foundational layer of a lot of things from Apple. Could you explain that for folks?
Yeah, so I mean, the word App Intents is probably a little developer-centric, but essentially, from a technology standpoint, what Apple gave us, and actually what they had before, was these things called Siri Intents. And that powered, if you wanted to integrate with Siri, you could sort of define like entry points into your apps. And I think the original widgets even kind of piggybacked off of Siri Intents. And they sort of realized, I think, that that's a system that they can spread all over the place. And so they kind of thought it, and they call them App Intents. And an App Intent is essentially a way for us developers to tell the system, this is a thing my app can do. Here's a bunch of different settings that you can set with that. And then you can sort of plug those into all sorts of different systems. And so the widgets, a lot of people, I don't even know, realize this, but on a widget, if it's whenever you place it, if your app is still in, or your home screen is still in like wiggle mode, if you tap on that, it'll open up this little configuration page, and you can pick a bunch of different options that control that widget. And that's all powered by App Intents. And App Intents also power the options that we have to plug into Siri right now. And there's a couple other things. Oh, and shortcuts, obviously, are powered by App Intents. So yeah, it's sort of just like defining an entry point into your app that isn't literally opening the app and hitting a button.
Yeah, I mean, I have a bigger theory on it, in the sense that like on the Mac, we had Apple events, which are the underlying layer of automation, right? So often it's just triggering an Apple event. That's what Apple Script does. That's what Automator did in the day. And even shortcuts for the Mac interacts with Apple events on the Mac. But it seems like Apple Intents has kind of grown out of the void for mobile, like for iPhone and iPad.
Yeah.
We didn't have Apple events, but now it seems like these Apple Intents are becoming that. Maybe not as thoroughly baked in, but just as useful. And you're right. It's the basis of widgets and shortcuts, and it's going to be the basis of Apple Intelligence as well. So
100%.
Yeah. So Apple developers like you are going to have every motivation to embrace them, which is great for us automators.
Yeah. And I think where it's like less baked in a way than Apple events, not that I've done Apple event development, but it's less in ways that like, it's not like the Mac where you can sort of hijack systems as easily.
Yeah.
But in some ways it's a little more advanced because it kind of came out of Siri. And Apple Intents also lets you define like queries that can go back to it.
Yeah.
So things like, you know, you can set which, in my case, you can set which sound you want the thing to play. But the way that's done is it's actually like you can ask the user as like a secondary question, what sound do you want it to play? And then the user can then kind of ask you behind the scenes, what options are there, and it can show those options. And so there's actually quite a bit of back and forth that allows for a lot more intuitive like user experiences. And like you said, all that's going to definitely play into Apple Intelligence.
So what are your favorite widgets for Dark Noise?
I mean, ultimately, everything comes down to a way to play a sound.
Yeah.
I'm a person who's, I think like most of my users, there's really a sound that you play regularly. And so for that, all of the like single noise widgets, whether it's on the lock screen or on your home screen, all of those allow for a whole bunch of customization. And so I like those because I can say, when I play this, it'll automatically stop at, you know, 5 a.m. and it'll fade out over 30 minutes. So over 30 minutes, it'll slowly fade out as opposed to just suddenly stopping, which always causes me to wake up. And the ability to like put those right in front of me on the lock screen, that's probably my favorite one now, especially when you combine it with focus modes. So my bedtime focus mode sets a lock screen that has this button on it. And that button is the one I play literally, my wife plays every night. And so I can just have it sitting there ready for me immediately right there on my home screen. And I never have to like think about it or open the app. That's probably my favorite one because, and that's kind of my like, I think the most interesting thing with automation in the Apple ecosystem lately has less to do with shortcuts like I was expecting and more to do with these, all of these system integrations hooking together. Because I just described an automation. I think you would describe, you would say this is an automation, which is at night when it's time for me to go to bed, it sets a home, a lock screen that looks a certain way. It's darker. It has a button that I can hit to start a sound. But none of that involves shortcuts or scripting or anything like that. It's all just different parts of the platform that all kind of work together really well.
Yeah. And Apple's done a really good job of kind of like baking that cake where you can make it like just like the idea of you set a focus mode and your watch face changes and your home screen changes. And like you said, all this stuff just becomes available to you. I will say that as we're talking, I'm madly updating the app because this idea of putting it in Control Center to me is golden. Like I feel like, that's for me. Just put my Thunderstorm in Control Center and I can just one swipe and a button press and I'm off to the races.
Yeah, it's cool. And you can put multiple of them next to each other. So you can, because now the new Control Center, you can have multiple pages.
Yeah.
So you could just have a like sound page that has your different options that you want and you can just pick which one you want and hit play.
You've been probably thinking about Control Center a lot as you've been doing this. What's your personal Control Center strategy? Have you come up with a cool way to put it all together?
You know, it's funny. I think I may have mentioned this the last time I was on too, but as a developer, it's always hard to get into any sort of system because you're wrecking your home screen or your Control Center in this case as you're developing. Cause I have pages of noises and stuff, and Control Center in particular is very, finicky when it comes to placing things.
Yeah.
That said, what I'm loving is I have a secondary, like my main Control Center looks pretty similar to before, just with a color, couple extra options. Like I have a thing that opens my Roku because I have a Roku TV. It opens the Roku app from the Control Center, which is surprisingly really nice. Yeah. And it's sitting right next to my Apple TV button for when I'm on a different TV. But my second screen is all home automation stuff. Yeah. So I have a big button that's my bedroom lamps, and then a smaller button that's my office lights, and another smaller button that's my living room lights. And having that, because the old Control Center home automation stuff was really finicky for me because it would sometimes move around on me, and I grew to just never trust it. And now I absolutely open that every time and have all summer since I set that up, which I'm loving.
Yeah, I like the idea of a home screen based Control Center. And I mean, when you think about it, it's two swipes. You swipe down to open Control Center and swipe up once.
You don't even have to do that. You can drag.
Yeah, that's true.
If you just continually drag your hand down, it will bounce between those pages. So if I just drag it down a little bit further, it'll go straight to that home one.
Yeah. But I mean, think of all the home automation stuff you can control that way. It's really quite impressive. I feel like that's one of the kind of unsung heroes of iOS 18. How was iOS 18 overall for you as a developer this year, getting your stuff updated for it and all that? Any big problems?
The control center was a bit of a problem because I got it all working relatively quickly early in the cycle. Yeah. But I did run into this one like kind of weird bug that wasn't a big deal and I worked around. But then I just sort of moved on. And then right towards the end, I was retesting everything and I noticed none of my icons showed up. And it turns out they took away the ability for control center widgets to render regular images. The only thing that is allowed anymore is SF symbols. Okay. And in my app, one, everything works off of images. That's what I have baked in. And I have all these custom icons that I've built, you know, over the years. But also there's like an icon builder. People can import their own images. And you can't just turn those into SF symbols on the fly. So I ended up having to, in a mad rush, build all of my like 50 or 60 icons as these kind of crazy SF symbols that Apple's defined, which are cool. They're kind of a pain to build.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple fallbacks. So like if you import your own custom image, it just shows like the mix icon on the control center, which is a little frustrating. And I've definitely have some bugs in some people's ears to maybe open that up next year. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. Well, now you have SF symbols for your icons, I guess.
That's true. And there has been places where that's been nice. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's rough. That's rough. I mean, Greg Scown from TechSixMatter once told me, he says, every WWDC, you get homework assignments. And so homework assignments are where you have to fix something to keep working. And presents are the things where you get new features without doing any work. And every year it's a comparison of how many homework assignments did I get versus presents.
Yeah, I've been pretty lucky with that in the last couple of years. It's more presents than homework assignments for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that they continue to push the button on the automation stuff. And I do think you're right. I mean, as this stuff leans into artificial intelligence, Apple is really putting a lot of bets down on that. So that actually makes it more attractive for developers to get automation. We almost get the automation stuff for free as people aim for Apple intelligence, which is really great. What automations are you doing these days, Charlie? You got any cool automations you're using in your life?
I think like my thing with automations is always weird. I feel like I have a lot of very simple automations.
Yeah.
And the moment they start getting complicated, I go way too far on them. So for example, I really love Federico Vitici's Apple Frames shortcut. Use it constantly.
Yeah, as a
developer. But using it on the Mac, what's that?
Yeah, as a developer, you would have a lot of use for that. Yeah.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But then like, you know, there's a couple things I kept trying to build little shortcuts around it to make it do a couple things. It was a little difficult to use on the Mac because shortcuts on the Mac is still a little dicey for me sometimes. So I ended up just building that into an app, which I'm like actively working on right now.
Okay.
And then another like overly complicated thing that I'm doing is my local newspaper doesn't have a RSS feed, which drives me crazy. So the only way for me to read it is either to like open up their website twice a week, because they dump everything in, you know, twice a week, and like read it there, and it's not a very intuitive site, or literally read the physical paper, which is what I've been trying to do for the last couple of years. Yeah. And so finally, with these new like AI coding tools, I just wrote a like script that scrapes their website and builds an RSS feed and posts it on a public GitHub and pushes that up. And then now I subscribe to that in Reader, and I have this like RSS version of my local news site. So like that's one end of the spectrum where I go like over the top. And then end of the spectrum. Oh yeah, go ahead.
I want to talk about that one first for a little bit. It's like,
let's do it.
So which AI tool did you use, and give us a little bit more meat on the bones here, how you pulled
that off. Yeah. I didn't know if that was too in the weeds as a developer here. So that was, I used, what is it called? Is it Cursor? There's this new like code editor that came out that's just has a whole bunch of AI stuff like baked into it. I think it uses Claude behind the scenes.
Okay.
And essentially it lets you, rather than like copy and paste a code document into a thing, yeah, it actually reads all the documents you have in your project at any given time. So I just started a new project, which is just a folder of files. Yeah. And I said, I want a Python script that can scrape this website and make an RSS feed out of it. And it did it like instantly. Now, it didn't know how to actually pull the right, you know, elements off the page to like set the title and everything. Yeah. But that was something I just needed to tweak, this little like line. Or I could literally highlight it and say, I want it to grab, you know, this line or whatever. I could just say those words out loud. And so pretty quickly I had this script that I could just run, and it sucked everything down. It created an XML file. But I've never done, I only recently actually got a Mac Mini that's just sort of like a home server.
Yeah.
So I had never done anything that sort of runs regularly on a home Mac. And so I just asked it in plain language, how can I run this every hour on the Mac? And it showed me how to like set the launch D automation. And it just runs that every hour. And it runs my little script. And then it runs, it commits that to a GitHub repo and then pushes it. And I actually made it a little bit more advanced, and it was all through just conversation. I was like, how can I make this cache so it only ever posts like three articles at a time? Because my local paper would post the whole newspaper all at once.
Yeah.
So my RSS feed would just be one giant paper. I'm not going to read everything just from that. So I kind of have it like slowly drip out throughout the day now. So it's mixed in with my other blogs and stuff. And it handled all that for me and just kind of worked with me through it. It was genuinely very impressive, as someone who hadn't used these tools that much for coding before.
Well, I think that one of the benefits of AI, I mean, there's downsides and upsides to all this, but one of the benefits for automators is that it democratizes that process.
Yeah.
I did a Max Parkey Labs video on, like, somebody written me saying, I want to get OmniFocus out as a markdown checklist, like my OmniFocus list. And there wasn't like an easy way to do it in the app. So I did an example where we just went to ChatGPT, and it was the same thing. It's like, I said, you know, I want you to query me for the name of an OmniFocus project, and then go into OmniFocus, get that list and save it out as a markdown file with this format, you know, the markdown checklist format, and then put it as a text file into the copy buffer. You know, it's like, that was my instruction, was something like that. And it got it largely on the first attempt. And then there was like one little tweak I made to it. I said, okay, that's good. Now go back and do this to it. And it rewrote the script, and I had an Apple script. And then you could drop that Apple script into an automator action. You could run it just as an independent Apple script. And then, you know, whereas if somebody had asked me to do that before, I could have cobbled it together for them, but it would have taken me an hour to kind of get it right.
You would have had to actively sit and think through it and read through what options are available.
And I'm like passable with Apple script, but I'm not Sal Segoyan, you know? And this thing, like I said, it took minutes. The other one I find it very useful, I tell people, is like, if you've always been intimidated by regular expressions and you want to embed a regular expression in your automation, just go to, you know, ChatGPT and ask it to compose the regex for you. And it gets it almost every time, the first time.
That one scares me only because... Well, because regex scares me generally.
Yeah, right.
Everybody. But in that case, it's like, I would have no way of confirming whether that's right or there's some weird bug that will only show up, you know, every once in a while.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, I mean, the regex stuff usually we're talking about is like, find the blank copy line and get a list of names from that. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff. And I'm not looking to do really high end stuff with my automation. But I do think that, like, you're a developer and you went to the AI tool to kind of get you up and running on something that wasn't in your wheelhouse. I feel like that is true also for just, you know, lunch pail everyday automators who are not developers. And suddenly it gives you the ability to embed a little snippet of Apple script in your shortcut that does something powerful, like on the Mac at least.
Yeah, that's to me where I'm really looking to see if Apple does anything, I guess not this year, but maybe next year with Shortcuts particularly, because
yeah,
the fact that there's not, like, you can't go to ChatGPT and ask it to help with a shortcut. I mean, you could, and maybe it'll like list it out, but it's an awkward, yeah, there's no just like paste this in, see if it works, but it yeah would be really cool if, especially because Shortcuts is such a narrowly defined thing. It feels like something it should be able to do.
It should be able to master that, right?
I mean, it'd be cool to be like, hey, can you make me a shortcut that'll do these five things? And then it just spits it out for you. And the nice thing there, Shortcuts are much more readable for non-developers.
Yeah.
And so you could look through it and be like, oh, I actually wanted to do, you know, this slightly differently or whatever. So that could be really interesting, I think.
You were saying earlier that a lot of your automations are very simple. I think, because we see this with a lot of guests come in, they feel almost guilty. They're like, well, you know, my automation is real simple stuff. But I'm like, I feel like that is actually the type of automation that people actually use. And,
yeah,
and I think I don't want the listeners of the show to think, well, I've got to write a 30-step shortcut, or I'm not worthy of shortcuts. No, I mean, the best ones sometimes are two or three steps, but they solve a problem for you, and they do it like efficiently. And it's those 2 and 3 step ones that work for years and years, and you never think about them again, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a big fan of simple automation steps if it makes your life easier. You know?
Yeah. One of those, actually, the one that's been really working into my productivity life, I guess, over the last year or so has been Raycast in particular. And yeah, that's on the Mac, obviously, but like, yeah, just being able to do little simple things that I think most people were already doing with other tools before, but because I just happen to have it, yeah, I now just kind of use it for everything. But like, one example is I use Apple Music as my way of playing music most of the time. And like hitting, I guess this is the case for any music app, but hitting play pause on my keyboard is such a like lottery of whether it's going to play or pause my music or play something on YouTube or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
And I know there's like apps that try to make that better or something, but what I realized is there's an Apple Music extension for Raycast, and it lets you play and pause and skip. And I just set keyboard shortcuts. That's if I hit like Control Option Command Spacebar,
yeah,
which sounds more complicated than it is, but I'm just mashing the bottom left buttons on my keyboard.
Yeah.
It'll always play or pause Apple Music specifically.
Yeah.
And then the same, you know, 3 with left and right skips skips or previous. And that is something I use literally nonstop all the time when I'm like jumping in a meeting and I'm like, oh, I need to stop this music. And it's been amazing.
Well, I feel like Apple Music needs some sort of automation to address it directly anyway. Because I do think for users that don't know about those tricks, it's really hard. You know, it's like I've got, yeah, a Stream Deck dial, and I've got one program that anytime I turn the dial, I run a little Apple script that lowers the Apple Music volume,
yeah,
by 10%, cool, you know, or, and if I push it in, it mutes it. But I had to write little scripts for it because you're right. Yeah. You don't know that when you hit that volume down button, it's actually going to affect the music, you know, and you know, when the phone
and
is
and that's
ringing.
Not one because we have weird, complicated setups. It's like if you, yeah, use Safari, the built-in browser, and you open YouTube,
it
YouTube will take over that button.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
to be fair, if you're watching a YouTube video and you hit pause, you would also expect that to pause.
Yeah.
So like it makes sense. I don't know what the actual solution there is, but it is very confusing, I feel like.
Yeah. What do you think of Raycast? I feel like I haven't given it enough of a shot because I'm in so deep with Alfred. Cause, you know, I've got Alfred like custom programmed for, yeah, everything I wanted to do.
And you've used it for how long?
Yeah, a long time. But I mean, I did switch. I started with Quicksilver. I've been on different keyboard launchers, but Raycast, there's a lot of people that really love it.
I'm not coming at it from the, well, maybe I am coming at it from a good angle, but I never used an alternative launcher. I always was just fine with Spotlight. Because by the time I kind of got into the Mac ecosystem, it was acceptable.
Yeah.
So for me, Raycast is quite a bit faster. That was the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Just in terms of opening the app that I want. And then I've slowly worked in a lot of those extensions. So like The ability to search my Apple Notes directly in there is really nice. The ability to, like I said, play and pause my music is nice. I will open up shortcuts directly through there pretty often, which probably Spotlight can do as well. Let me look. Let's see. It's not like I'm not using it in some crazy advanced way. It's more just the fact that it's always, oh, snippets. It does have snippets, which I do actually use. I never really had a good snippet setup. I never set one up. Yeah. And now that my day job has actually switched from just being a developer to doing a lot more like marketing businessy things. And so I've ended up needing like email replies and stuff like that.
I feel like the Raycast window management tools are very impressive, you know?
Yeah. I haven't even used that. I'm not even sure what those options are.
Yeah. They're good. They're good. They have one called reasonable size. I like that. Just make this window a reasonable size.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. The Raycast is really good. I don't know if it's at parity with Alfred at this point, but it's certainly in the ballpark. And I subscribe to it because I like to keep up with what's going on. And it seems like the developers are very active and really trying to push to make this a great app.
Yeah.
But getting back to kind of the point of the small automations, people should never feel bad about it. Like recently, I just finished the OmniFocus field guide and a bunch of work on OmniFocus, but people in the Mac Sparky Labs are asking me to share some content on Apple Reminders. So I've been using that a bit. And like, the capture on OmniFocus is really good. The capture on Reminders is not so good, but you can write small 1 and 2 step shortcuts to fix capture.
What is capture? To show my ignorance. I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's like, oh, I need to take the trash cans out Thursday night. I need to put that in my task manager app. And like with OmniFocus, you just hit a keyboard shortcut, type a few keystrokes and you're in. Whereas Reminders, you generally have to open the application and like go find the list. And it's just more tedious. True. You know, you want as little friction between the idea of something you have to do and getting it captured by your system as possible. And like shortcuts can fix things like that with little steps, but people too often think, well, it's, you know, I need to pull out shortcuts when I have a big project, but no, it's a little stuff.
Yeah, my version of that is I have a shortcut that I do use pretty regularly. That's all it does is it opens do and creates a reminder for laundry that's 1 hour from now.
Yeah.
And it does open the app, but it's actually kind of nice because I've ended up using it a lot for things that aren't just laundry. I call it my laundry shortcut, but in reality, it's I want to remember to do something in an hour and it to continually bug me shortcut. Yeah. Because I really often change the title.
Yeah. In an hour, I really want to be bugged. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. A simple shortcut. Now, do you launch that from, how do you launch that one?
I do almost everything through search.
Okay.
So I just start typing the word laundry and it pops up. Although, oh yeah, there it goes. It didn't right away. I'm on the iOS 18.1 beta. And I can tell you that one has been a lot rougher than 18.0. I have a second device with 18.0 just so I could test everything because that one's been a lot more stable. So I don't know how much longer we have till that one comes out, but we'll see. We'll see how that looks whenever it comes in October, I think is what they said.
Yeah. And we're going to be talking about that on Mayor's Max today, Apple Intelligence and what it's looking like for you. Do is such a funny app for me that like its selling point is that it's super annoying. It's like,
yes,
but it's the one. You know, it's like whoever thought of, here's a market opportunity. I'm just going to be such a pain in the butt that people will pay for me to get them to do their work.
I have such bad I don't know if it's work ethic or discipline or what it is, but there are a lot of things like just the regular daily take out the weekly take out the trash where it's like I need it to bug me in the morning and then I'll just sit there and be like, remind me in 3 hours. Remind me in 3 hours. But then it always reminds me when I'm finally in a situation where I can do it.
Yeah.
And traditional reminders, I just don't regularly open myself. I need something pushed into my face. And so do has been a life saver for me, honestly.
Yeah, I'm like that too. When I get focused on something, I just honestly, the world just stops kind of moving for me.
Yes, very much so.
It's a, I don't know. I think it's a, It's something that I've benefited from, but it's also drives the people around me completely insane because I just lose track of time. Okay. So Charlie, you've been writing automation for Apple devices. You use automation. What's your automation wish list? What's the stuff you'd like to see get better in automation?
So, I mean, I think one big one is integrations into Siri and Apple Intelligence. We don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but that's definitely where I think my eye is really focused is what are the things that are not just what we can already do, where I can make that as good of an experience as possible.
Yeah.
Because I think that really could be a nice entry point for automation for people who, you know, aren't the people who are going to sit there and spend time building out a shortcut or something like that. So that's definitely been something that's pretty heavy on my mind.
Yeah. It seems to me like the end goal of this AI push right now is we want our phone to become like a personal assistant. We want it to do the stuff for us that's tedious and we don't want to deal with. And you're right. That is automation. Ultimately, whatever kind of mechanism they hang it on, but they're not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how that shakes out. Another one is I'm a big fan of the more customizations they've given us for the home screens this year.
Yeah.
Like I like customization, making my home screen look cool, blah, blah, blah. Where it's really been really nice for me is the fact that I can change all of those based on context. Yeah. And then my phone looks and feels different based on context with like focus modes. Or like I switch my home screens around when I'm in travel mode because I do travel a lot for work. And one thing I really want to see, like they gave us the option for like dark mode icons or tinted icons on our home screens this year, but it's kind of all or nothing right now.
Yeah.
And that drives me crazy. I don't necessarily love the way all of the dark mode icons look. And I don't necessarily love them all changing to it automatically. So I would love to see next year a little more like detailed capabilities there as far as being able to choose which apps have which icons on the screen at a given point.
Now, am I right that the developers can submit a dark mode icon like file in the app? Or does Apple
essentially the way it works is when we create our icons, it used to be your icon had one image and that's what, well, actually it had a bunch of images at different sizes.
Yeah.
Now you can define three different images. There's your light mode, regular, you know, mode, a dark mode icon, and then this new tinted icon, which is one that's like optimized for where the user can pick literally exactly what color they want it.
If you're gonna make it orange, this is how the icon at least looks. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a cool system, but it feels a little hamstrung by the fact that you kind of have to go all or nothing right now.
Yeah. I feel like it's not, I feel like a lot of this stuff is like at early stages.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, you talked about context and focus mode. Those are that is red meat for me. I can't resist. If you do a lot of different focus modes, do you make the focus mode like the thing, do you press the focus mode actively on the phone or do you use like automation to trigger them?
I have one for bedtime.
Yeah.
And the rest of them, like it's really my day to day is pretty much normal or bedtime. And that's kind of it. I do have one, like when I'm traveling, it's kind of like, it's a travel focus mode, right? It's not something that's going to automatically trigger. I trigger it. Another big wish list item for me is I desperately wish that we had Shortcuts connection to control whether Apple Music was in clean, is it called clean mode or clean and explicit mode? I don't know what the name is. But I have kids and we listen to a lot of music and then I listen to a lot of music and I don't necessarily want that setting the same in those two different contexts.
No, you don't. Yeah.
And man, I wish I could have it automatically go to clean mode when it's in CarPlay. Because I know they have those automatic car focus modes. And I keep thinking of like, oh, I could do this, I could do that. But pretty much it always comes down to, I just want it to control what my Apple Music will automatically start playing if I put a radio on.
But that's like a problem that people have. And I feel like there's really not a way to address it. You could probably Apple script around it, but that only works on a Mac. And like when you're in the car, that's not going to help you. So
no, that's nine times out of 10, I'm either in a car or I'm cooking breakfast and I just throw some music on. And it's like, I have to play playlists that I've made, or I have to like dig into settings. Cause of course Apple won't show us settings inside of the apps that you're using. So I have to dig into settings, find that button, turn it on, and then forget about it, and then turn it on another time, or turn it off, you know, some other time when I realize that it's in that mode.
Yeah,
it's a little aggravating that I can't automate that one.
Well, if anybody listening has an idea around that one, let us know, and
yes,
we'll update the show. But I think you're kind of stuck, as far as I understand it. With the focus modes for me, they are the triggers quite often. You know, when I set a focus mode, then all sorts of stuff happens. That's when dark noise gets triggered and different, you know, home screens appear and like that. But I, because the way automation is written on Apple devices now, the focus mode can become the trigger or the action. Like you can have triggers that like you get in a certain location and then the focus mode gets turned on. But often for me, it's the, it's just pushing the button to turn the focus mode on. And I actually often do it just on the Apple Watch because it's so fast. But everything switches up and music starts playing and stuff like that. So it's kind of fun for me to use the focus modes as a trigger, because it also kind of feels like an affirmative kind of, okay, now it's on. Now I'm doing work mode, or now I'm personal mode. I'm not going to worry about work, you know, that kind of stuff. I really am happy with the way Apple has pursued that over the last few years. Well, Charlie, it's always so nice having you on the show. If people want to learn more about Dark Noise and what you're up to, where should they go?
They can. Well, this is a harder question in the year 2024 than it was in 2020. I'm on all of the different social media things. On most of them, it's Charlie M. Chapman is my handle. That's like Mastodon, Threads, even Blue Sky. On Twitter, it's _ Chuck E.C. And then you can find everything about Dark Noise will be on darknoise.app. But I also post about it on all of the different social media platforms as well.
Well, we are the Automators Podcast. Rosemary will be back feeling better in 2 weeks. But thank you so much for coming on today, Charlie. It's really fun talking and catching up with you as always. You can find the Automators Podcast at relay.fm/automators. If you'd like to get the ad-free extended version of the show, check out Automators Max. You can sign it up for right there. Today in Automators Max, Charlie and I are going to talk about Apple Intelligence and where we see it heading. Either way, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.